like we got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Break it, Glenn Cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome in Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I'm Nick Schwert. Happy to have you with us on a lovely Tuesday afternoon. I don't know what's going on with my headphones. I can't hear anything, but that's okay. I don't need to hear myself. Hopefully you can hear me. You can hear my guy, Derek Johnson. We got a fun show planned for you. Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World is going to join us coming up at 3:35. David Beatty had his first official press conference of the 2017 season earlier this afternoon, and we'll get you the highlights from that. Hawk Talk last night. Maybe we'll get to some audio from that later on in the show as well. Let's rank stuff at 4 o'clock. News break. And we got some NFL discussion to do, as that's right around the corner as well. It feels like it's so weird going from last week to this week. It just feels like a new season has begun. It just feels like we're not doing any of the same stuff. We're not talking about any of the same stuff we were, because football is officially upon us, and it feels awesome because the doldrums of summer can kind of wear on you at times, and there's just nothing like football season, especially with college football coming right around, NFL right after that. Last night, KU made official their first depth chart of the season, and to no surprise, there's still going to be some things that haven't quite been cleared up, most notably the quarterback on the depth chart. It lists Peyton Bender or Carter Stanley, and if you look across this depth chart, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, literally any position we had a question on, it's basically or, except that other DN.
Is there any one position we had question marks about?
I think the other DN.
The other DN, Josh Ahambe, is going to start opposite Dorrance Armstrong, ahead of Isaiah Bean. J.J. Holmes is your second tackle next to Daniel Wise. And Bryce Tornaden is going to be one of your starting safeties opposite Mike Lee. You have got three starting defensive players from Free State: Joe Dineen, Keith Loniker, and Bryce Tornaden. And we're going to let you hear some of this audio from David Beatty. But he said that Tornaden was like that close to being named a team captain, and he's on their leadership council as a sophomore. As a sophomore who almost didn't come to KU. If you remember, he had initially committed to North Dakota State and then kind of at the 11th hour decided he wanted to stay at home, and now all of a sudden in year two, he's going to be your starting safety.
Well, and think about that, too. You have Mike Lee next to him. I know you have a lot of youth in that secondary, and that's kind of scary this year if you look at this two deep with the secondary. I mean, your four corners who are on that two deep, three from JUCOs in their first year, the other redshirted last year. Then you have your two safeties or sophomores. So that is a little scary for this year. But think about that for the future. Think about that for next year and the year after. That's going to be pretty deadly.
You can go across the entirety of this two deep, and that's what it is. It just goes two deep. And tell me how many seniors you see starting. Offensively, Ben Johnson at tight end.
Mm-hmm. And then you have Jason Rhodes at left guard. So just two.
So two guys on offense who are starting seniors.
See, one on defense.
One on defense, that's Derek Neal starting at nickelback. And then punter Cole Moose. That is four. Is my math correct? Did we just count four people?
Yes.
Carry the seven. I don't know. I don't know my long division anymore. That's four seniors. So you want to talk about in the secondary, the youth infusion? It's all over the team, man. So, and we're not going to get too ahead of ourselves and think, well, imagine what they're going to be like next year at this time. Forget about this season. Let's get to 2018. But it is. It is exciting for a program that's already creating some buzz around here, knowing that it's not something where we have to start wondering, okay, how big is this window of opportunity? This thing's just beginning, man. If you're believing in David Beatty and what he's building, it doesn't matter what it looks like, what it projects towards next year, the year after. You should hopefully be ready to get used to this kind of stuff, because hopefully this is what it's going to be like for a while. I mean, Dorrance Armstrong, he's not a senior, but if he has the type of season that we know he's capable of and what we want him to, what he wants himself to, then he won't be here next year. And good. You want to send guys to the league. Don't be selfish and say, come on, you got to come back for a senior year. No, man. If you're not actively rooting for Dorrance Armstrong to be in the NFL next year, then you're not as good of a fan as you think you are. That is the best. You know what would be better than Dorrance Armstrong coming back for a senior year just to finish the job, whatever he wants to do? You know what would be better? Him getting drafted in like the second round. That'd be pretty good. That'd be pretty good for what David Beatty's trying to build, because that's what the recruits are looking at. That's what they want to know. Can this program send guys to the NFL? Dorrance Armstrong could and should be the shining example of that. But it's not just, we're not just talking about the starters here when you look at the youth infusion. I believe it was John Kirby of Jayhawk Slant. Four senior starters, five total. Total on the two deep. Five seniors.
That's incredible.
Isn't it? There can't be another team in the Big 12 who is going to be so youthful, but a lot of these guys have played. Even the guys who you're looking at as younger dudes who maybe don't have the experience, whether it's Bryce Tordade and Mike Lee. I mean, these guys on defense, they played last year. They're not dudes who are just being thrown into the fire. I think it's awesome to look at this, especially knowing that people around the program, people in the program, are very excited about it. I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. You look at the wide receivers. You have four starting wide receivers in this offense. And they are Steven Sims, Jeremiah Booker, who was named a captain, Kerr Johnson, JUCO transfer, and Ryan Shadler. I've been high on Ryan Shadler. David's been high on Jeremiah Booker. I mean, they're not similar wide receivers in stature or in style of play, but both of those guys have clearly stood out. But yeah, Kerr Johnson at that third wide receiver spot, and Dalen Charlotte is not amongst the names that we listed. Again, we'll get into the David Beatty audio. He was asked about that at his press conference today, and his answer was essentially that, well, a lot of it's been opportunity and the guys around him. It doesn't, specifically with the wide receivers, it really doesn't matter. That is probably the one position group where you should try to take the least amount of stock away into who's starting, because they're going to be 8 to 12 guys who are playing on a weekly basis. They're all going to get their opportunities, and if Dalen Charlotte really is as good as advertised, then he's going to be out there making plays, getting lots of snaps.
Well, and also you look at this like, oh, well, why, if he's behind Jeremiah Booker, why wouldn't he start over this new guy, this JUCO guy, Kerr Johnson? I think how this is set up, too, is they have the two outside receivers and the two inside receivers. And we've had plenty of guests on that, whether it's players, whether it's DL, talking about how it is a big difference for this team between the inside receivers and the outside guys. So just because Dalen Charlotte's your backup at the outside receiver position behind Jeremiah Booker,
he may be the third wide receiver in the depth chart.
Right, exactly.
And Steven Sims, we know what he did a year ago. Jeremiah Booker, named a team captain. I asked Ryan Shadler today who's the leader of the wide receiver group. He didn't hesitate to say Jeremiah Booker. And he said all of the things that we've already heard about Jeremiah Booker, which is that, you know, the typical coach speak. First one in, last one out. They had to pull him out of the weight room. He sets the tone. You would expect a guy like that to be rewarded and be amongst those starting wide receivers. So Dalen Charlotte's there right behind him, and it says Dalen Charlotte or Evan Fairs. So that almost tells you that maybe there is some stiff competition. Maybe that's the coaching staff trying to kind of light a fire under Charlotte.
Well, and that's how it is for Charles Baldwin, too. He's an or, but I think we kind of expected that one. Any chance that they, like you said, just trying to light a fire under these players who Alabama transfers, they come in maybe thinking that, oh, this is going to be a cakewalk to start here at Kansas, and maybe this is more of an indication of that?
Maybe, but I don't think it's fair to lump them in together simply because we haven't heard the same, anything close to the same things about both guys. We've heard a lot of positive things about Dalen Charlotte. Not to say that Charles Baldwin isn't doing good things. We haven't heard those same things be talked about with him. So while it may be true for one of them, I don't know if it's fair to say it's necessarily true for both of them. But I think it's really easy anytime somebody is not you're listed as a starter, it's really easy to say, hey, maybe they're just trying to light a fire under him. But I'll tell you this much. The season starts in 4 days. So if you're 4 days before the start of the season and you're still needing to get motivated, then maybe it's never going to happen.
And I'm sure for some Kansas fans, this is striking an alarm in their brain, because then all of a sudden you start thinking back, oh, what is going on? How come every time we get a transfer who's this former high-level recruit, whether you want to talk to quarterbacks of Dane Chris, Jake Heaps, whether you want to talk about Justin McKay, a former five-star guy, whatever it is, starts to ring an alarm in your head that goes, oh, not again.
Well, for me, it didn't ring an alarm, but I did kind of turn my head a little bit and say, what's up with that? But, like, again, you look at it. Okay, well, Steven Sims Jr., one of the best returning, he is the top returning receiver in the Big 12. He's going to start. Jeremiah Booker might be the hardest worker on the team. You're going to be rewarded for that. You're going to play. I mean, you have to have talent, too, and he clearly does. I mean, 6'2", 200 pounds. He is a physical freak. That's the kind of guy you want out there. So if those are the two guys beating you out, what are you going to do? You know?
I mean, we had indication this was...
You want stiff competition,
yeah.
Right? Maybe if you want to look at it optimistically, maybe you should look at it and say, if one of the players who you think is going to be really good is at number third on the depth chart or second on the depth chart, whatever you want to say, you can take it one of two ways. You can say, oh, maybe he's not working hard enough. Maybe they're just really deep at that position. Maybe wide receiver is the deepest position on the team, and there's going to be stiff competition all year long there.
And we had indication this was going to happen. I just don't think we took it all the way, because it was back in spring and it was for the spring game. But you remember they had that players draft, and Daylon Charlotte was the third or fourth receiver taken. It was Ryan Shadler, Steven Sims as the first two guys.
Yeah.
And so we kind of sat there then like, oh, what's going on here? But maybe that was an indication. And yeah, they do play different, one's an inside receiver, one's outside. But I mean, it looks like here that Ryan Shadler has a little bit more from the coaches than he does for Daylon Charlotte.
I think Ryan Shadler is going to be a fan favorite this year. I think very early on, you are going to see his presence. You are going to feel his presence on the field. That dude is one of the quickest, fastest guys on the team. Was an all-state track runner in high school. He had just an unbelievably rare disorder that took 20 years for doctors to finally diagnose. Had surgery for 5 hours. His insides were jumbled is essentially the best way to describe it. His intestines, his appendix, they're all twisted and contorted across his body. He had surgery. He's in the best shape of his life. He's finally healthy after 20 years, converted from running back to wide receiver. This guy is going to be an absolute stud, and I love the fact that he's going to get that opportunity. Maybe he wouldn't have got much of an opportunity if Quib Gonzalez was on this team still, but he's not. And guys like Shadler are the types of guys that you want in that offense. I'm excited to see what he's going to do. 318, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We'll let you hear some of that David Beatty audio coming up in the next segment. Matt Tate joins us later. But before we do take a break, I want to talk quickly about the Danny Duffy news. If you haven't heard, it was reported earlier today that on Sunday night, he was cited for driving under the influence. If I have the story correctly, which it isn't necessarily factual, this is just what's being reported, is that he was at a Burger King, and he was essentially passed out in his car, with the car running, with the car in drive, and somebody had to reach into the car, put it into park, police sirens came up, he woke up, tried to hop in the passenger seat, and if there's one prevailing sentiment that I've seen today from Royals fans, it is this. This week just keeps getting worse. You lose again last night, and now this. Please stop trying to compare your crappy baseball team to somebody drinking and driving, because there's absolutely no relation between it. Your team sucks right now. That's frustrating. It has nothing to do with the fact that Danny Duffy made a terrible, terrible mistake. I'm not going to crucify Danny Duffy for this. A lot of people do it. A lot of people make mistakes. But it isn't just a mistake. It's a crime. It's against the law. The reason it's against the law is because you're endangering your life and you're endangering it for others on the road. And it is in no way, shape, or form related to the fact that your baseball team can't swing the bat right now. It just keeps getting worse. Worst week ever. Stop it. You had one of the pillars of your organization die in a car crash earlier this year. The city, the fan base, the team mourned over it. And Danny Duffy, who was perhaps Yordano Ventura's closest teammate in that organization, makes an unbelievably terrible mistake. I'm not here to crucify people who drink and drive. It is a very, very common practice, I think, especially in this part of the country. I grew up in Topeka. I grew up north of town. A lot of country roads. It's where people try to get away with it, right? And it gets swept under the rug. And we just chalk it up to it being a mistake. And people try to get away with it, and they'll do it for 20 years and never get caught and think, what's the worst that could happen? It's egregious, man. It's inexcusable. It is absolutely inexcusable for you or me or the average Joe, for a multimillionaire and Danny Duffy. It's almost unforgivable. It is almost unforgivable for somebody in Danny Duffy's position to be drinking and driving ever. I mean, I'm a poor 20-something, and I call an Uber. I'll get a friend to drive me if I need a ride 2 minutes from downtown Lawrence to my apartment. Danny Duffy is a multimillionaire. There is never, ever, ever an excuse. And when guys like Tiger Woods do it, it becomes a punchline. Passed out in his car. Could have died. He could have killed somebody else, an innocent bystander. And we make jokes about it. And I don't want to sound like a hypocrite because I am somebody who can find ways to laugh at a lot of different things. But drinking and driving isn't one of them. And don't compare it to your baseball team sucking because they're not related. It's 322, New FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. Hear from David Beatty coming up next.
This weather update brought to you by Scott Temperature, proudly serving Lawrence for 70 years.
New. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
It's 3:36, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN with Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert, Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Happy to have you with us on a Tuesday afternoon. Let's Rank Stuff coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. It's going to be a very daring edition of that segment, so you're not going to want to miss it. But right now, let's welcome on our good friend from the Lawrence Journal World, Matt Tate, once again joins the program. How are you, sir?
I'm great, man. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Always good to talk to you, man.
You know what, though? It was even better because I got to see you today.
That's right. You get the double whammy. So, very few. I like to keep myself hidden, kind of like, I don't know, what's Batman's real name? Clark Kent?
Bruce Wayne?
Bruce.
That
yeah. I'm
Clark
not
Kent.
A...
Close.
I'm not a superhero junkie, so.
You were close because you had it down to two names. You get half credit for that.
Thanks, man. I got a question about, let's talk some football because obviously you were just at the David Beatty presser earlier today. No shocker that he's playing it pretty close to the vest when it comes to who's going to be the starting quarterback for this team. How do you feel about the way that he's kind of staying mum on who's going to be that guy when KU trots out in the field on Saturday?
Yeah, you're right. It is no surprise. It's certainly not shocking. This is not only something that fits him and is what he's kind of shown himself to do since he's been at KU, but it's also something that's happening all over the place at all levels of football, and it's disappointing. I mean, there's no, I think the fans are disappointed. I think there's this weird thing, and obviously it's because, we're the ones that have to go up there and ask, but I think there's this weird vibe that, like, these football coaches and people in those positions think, like, that reporter A or Joe reporter or whomever it is, they are the ones that need to know this information or else they can't sleep at night. And, it's our job to find out or to try to find out, but the reason we do that job is to give that information to the, thousands and thousands and thousands of people who follow the program, who read our stuff, who listen to your show. I don't think he's keeping it from anyone on a personal level or anything like that, but I think sometimes they forget that – while we're the ones asking, you know, we're not necessarily asking to be in the know for ourselves. We're trying to serve our readers and our listeners and you know, that audience. So that kind of gets annoying to feel that way and to feel that vibe, because all we're doing is our jobs, and they have the right to not share whatever they want. I mean, that's also their job. But, you know, it just seems like it's kind of a little bit much. Today, for instance, you know, he was asked again about his starting quarterback, and he said, you know, that everybody would know when he took the field. And that's fine. We will. We'll find out. But then the follow-up question to that from someone in the room was, well, when will you tell your team, or when will you tell that quarterback? And he also said, well, when he gets on the field. Well, no. That's not true, first of all. It's not necessary. Second of all, you could easily still keep the identity of your starting quarterback a mystery, but answer that question by saying, you know what, I told those guys this morning, and everybody's ready, and we know who we're going to follow, and you guys will find out on Saturday. You know, so I think it's just not just here and not just with college football, but with a lot of football. It's just taking it too far, a step too far. And I don't like it. I mean, I don't have to like it. Nobody cares if I like it or not, but I don't like it. I have no problem if you don't want to tell me who the quarterback is, but the rest of that stuff's just weird. I mean, there's no way that your team is going to find out who their starting quarterback is when he takes the field on Saturday. If that's true, and it's not, it's 0% true, but if that is true, then that's bad coaching. I mean, that you know the whole thing is about having your guys prepared. Well, how can they be prepared if they don't know if it's going to be Peyton Bender or Carter Stanley or whoever the heck else could be in there, you know, until that number and that helmet runs on the field? That just seems crazy, and it seems petty, and it seems unnecessary.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Like, I don't care at all. Like, I'm not offended in the least bit that he's not going to tell us. Like,
right.
I would expect that, to be completely
right.
honest. I would expect
right.
a coach.
Yeah, we've reached that point. We understand that's how it goes.
Right, but and again, you're absolutely right. Like, there's no way the clock's going to be, you know, they're going to go do the coin toss, and the team's going to come back. Okay, KU's receiving. They're doing the kickoff, and then KU takes it back to the 25. And then Peyton Bender and Carter Stanley both run to the huddle with their helmet, and he points to one of them and says, actually, no, it's going to be you. Like, that's that's not going to happen. There's no way a coach would handle it like that.
No, and they wouldn't even do that in Hollywood. I mean, that's a bad script, too. You know, nobody would do that. So, you know, yeah, so it's not necessary. And furthermore, it's I don't think it's necessary this time around, because I think everybody's known or speculated or guessed or been right for quite a while now that it's going to be Peyton Bender. And if it's not, color me surprised. But there's a reason they brought that guy here. There's a reason that he has been hyped up. There's a reason that he fit the profile of what they needed. And by all accounts, he's had a good spring. He's had a good summer. He's had a good camp. It's him. There's no reason to wonder if it is or isn't. So that's not a knock on Carter Stanley. I think, you know, they have something valuable there if that's how it goes down, and if he's healthy enough to be a backup and all that stuff, then he's has a great amount of value for this team. But, you know, yeah, the secretive stuff about something that, you know, on the surface seems pretty obvious, it's just, you know, you just kind of have to laugh at it and go, okay, well, I guess that's how it goes, you know. But Marshawn Lynch is responsible for this. Bill Belichick is responsible for this. I mean, all of these guys, Russell Westbrook did it. All of these guys who get up in front of the media and you know, answer with the same two words or do the tough guy act, you know, about how I'm not going to answer a question because I'm too cool. Well, that's fine, you know, and I don't think that's what Beatty's doing. I'm not saying that.
No, I thought he actually handled it pretty well today when he kind of ended it.
He
ended it by saying, you know,
he was funny, right?
Right. How many more ways you want to ask it? And so I can try and not answer the question. So he's pretty much letting us know, like,
no,
I'm not going to answer this, and I know you guys are going to keep asking.
Yeah, no, I've got nothing against him for that. I wasn't throwing him in that category, but it's definitely an epidemic. Those types of guys that I mentioned are impacting the way young people even are seeing it. You know, you get high school kids acting like that, and no, there's no need for that. There's no reason for that, and it's not helping anybody. You know, we want to share the stories. We want to bring the news to the people who are interested. We want our readers and like your listeners to be energized and excited about the content. And you know, that's all we're doing, trying to make things connect and do our jobs and have fun with it. It's you know, this is far from the most serious thing on the planet, but I get it. It's also their careers and their livelihoods and things like that. So anyway, I don't generally whine about that kind of stuff. Like I've said, it is kind of what it is, you know, but taking it that one step farther today was just a little bit much.
Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World joining us here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. The rest of the depth chart, there's a lot of other questions you could ask. At the wide receiver position, Dalen Charlotte not listed as one of the four starters. He's going to be an outside receiver, so maybe the more accurate way to say that is not listed as one of the two starters behind Sims and Booker. Did that surprise you a little bit?
Maybe, but you know, I don't worry about that too much either, because he's going to play a ton, and yeah, they're going to have him on the field. Beatty even referenced that a little bit. You know, that he talked about the starting, you know, title of starter being a little bit overrated, and I get what he's saying, but you know, he said it means nothing, and I don't think that's true. I think it means a lot. I think it means a lot to these kids. I think it means a lot to the fan base. That's what people want to know. That, you know, there's a reason that. You have earned the right to start, and so it doesn't mean nothing. But I get his point again that you know, there's plenty of reps, there's plenty of opportunities. These guys are going to play plenty, and Dalen Charlotte is a guy that, you know, from all angles appears like he's going to be on the field a ton and get a lot of action and have a chance to make a ton of plays. So, you know, if anything, it tells you that those other guys are where they need to be. I mean, they've been in the program for a bunch of years now, and they're veterans, and they're solid, and their work ethic and all of those things are where they need to be. So if anything, it might tell you some good news about the program, because you don't want first-year guys and freshmen coming in and playing ahead of guys that have been here 3 years. If that happens, then either you recruited a hell of a class, which is possible, but more likely it's that the guys you had sitting around aren't very good. So it's good news for them that these guys are holding down those spots. And yeah, Charlotte's going to play plenty, and he's going to be a lot of fun. I think he's going to be a guy that fans love.
Only three starters listed on offense and defense that are seniors, four if you want to count Cole Moose at punter, but only five seniors on the entirety of this two deep. What does that kind of tell you about this makeup of the team? And if you're a fan, should that get you a little bit excited about the future of this team?
I think so. I think it's definitely exciting. You got a bunch of guys that likely will be back with some good experience and maybe for a couple of years, which can only help, you would think, if they're getting the right guys. I also think it's just a reminder of you know, the trouble that he was in when he got here. You know, that roster was so thin, and there were so many guys that left the program that left them in bad scholarship numbers, that it makes sense that the senior class is light. It makes sense that in that senior class you're talking about a situation where maybe not a ton of talent there, but even the talent that is there, there's just not a lot of bodies. So it makes sense. It tells you both things. It tells you there's some good, young, exciting talent, and it tells you that, hey, remember that 50-something number that he took over with and had when he got here? You know, that was a real thing, and there was a reason that he only had 50-some scholarship players, and he's getting closer. He's crawling back to that magic number of being full, and so, there's a lot of good things happening. There's no question about it, and I think people should be very excited about the talent and the future and about Saturday. I mean, it's game time. It's football season. It's hard to believe.
Matt Tate, Lawrence Journal World. I'm Nick Schwert, Rock Chalk Sports Talk, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. You think this time next week we're going to have just as many questions about this two deep, who's going to be starting, as we do today? Because I think we both agree KU should handle SEMO pretty easily on Saturday. A lot of guys should get some playing time. How much of those depth chart questions, whether it's at quarterback, wide receiver, wherever else you want to look at, do you think will be solidified after that game on Saturday?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think the nature of the way Beatty does things with, you know, always talking about you're only as good as your next rep and those types of things. I mean, I think because of that, you have some of those questions that linger all season, but that's okay too. But I think some of the bigger ones, I think the quarterback question will be answered, and therefore it will feel like you have a lot less questions, you know, because that's a big one. Even though that's only one position and one name, it's worth a lot. It's got a lot of weight. And so if we find out that it's very clear that they have a starter and a number one guy and he goes out and plays well, then that makes everything else kind of, you know, fit into place around that, I guess. So, I think there'll be questions all year. It's the way he does things, and in some ways that makes playing for him appealing, I'm sure. You come in and you've got an opportunity. If you're second or third on the depth chart week one, that doesn't mean you're done. That doesn't mean you're buried. That all that does is inspire you to keep working, because if you outwork the guy in front of you, there's a real chance that you will get an opportunity here, and that's proven to be true, and that's something that he can sell when he's recruiting kids, and that's something that I think is probably important to kids. You know, it's all you ask for is an opportunity, and a lot of places with a lot of talent, and there being a clear line between the talent and the reserves and all of that type of thing, it's hard for those backups and third stringers to you know, keep fighting and keep believing that it's all going to be worth it, getting their butts kicked day after day is going to be worth it because they might get an opportunity. But at a place like Kansas where the program currently sits, I think those guys believe that, and I think that can only help the program as a whole.
Matt, I know you're short on time, so I'll let you go, but I got to ask you one more thing before I do. This Saturday against SEMO, give me a breakout performer for KU football you're going to be looking for.
Wow, good question. I don't even have an answer. I want to say someone on offense because I think they should put up a lot of points. I think they should have a lot of fun. I'm excited to see what Khalil Herbert can do. I'm excited to see what their running backs can do. I think the offensive line is still the biggest question. I mean, we don't know anything about Bender, anything real anyway. But everything that I've heard makes me believe that he's got a chance to be pretty good, and at the very least solid. So I think it comes back to the offensive line and how much better that group is. And one way you'll find that out is you know, with their blocking up front, not just protecting Bender, but opening holes for these guys to run. So maybe it's a lame answer. I guess the exciting answer could be Khalil Herbert there, because I love his talent. I love the way he runs. He's experienced now. He's got a chance to you know, take a big step forward. He got a little taste of what it's all about last year, and this year he seems to be in much better, a much better position to kind of really be an impact player. So I'm excited to see him, but also because of what that will show about the offensive line. Call me normal. I mean, I'm excited to see Dalen Charlotte too. Let's go. Yeah. I mean, that's an Alabama guy, you know. Does he look like it when he wears crimson and blue and gets out there on the field? I mean, you certainly, if you're a fan, you certainly hope so, because that'll give you even more hope, I would imagine. So it'll be interesting. But, yeah, I mean, I think they need a convincing win. I think, you know, I asked Beatty about that today, what he'll be looking for. And as you heard, he talked about just playing a clean game. And I think that would go a long way. If they have an easy, convincing victory with very few mistakes, I think the fan base would feel really good about seeing that, because it's been a number of years since you've seen something like that around here. And, you know, even in those week one wins under Turner Gill or Charlie Weiss or whatever the case has been, they've been flawed victories. And even though the score was, you know, a little more lopsided than probably the game was, it didn't necessarily mean everything was perfect. You know, they made some mistakes. They had some penalties. They had some personnel issues, things like that, in all of those games. And you know, so that doesn't necessarily make you feel like a big season is ahead. But if they can go out, put up some points, play tough defense like they're capable of playing, and you know, be clean, yeah, don't make mistakes, have the right personnel out there, I think it'll be exciting. I think it'll get more people back for the second game. You know, because it's easy to show up for this one. They're honoring the Orange Bowl group, and that's a lot of fun. People want to go out there and see those guys and remember those guys. So easy to show up for that one. But do you come back for week two? That's the big question, and I think that's what these guys are going to answer. If they go out and play like that, that'll be fun. But defensively, I want to see the cornerbacks. I know I skipped back to a question that you already asked, but I want to see those guys. They're brand new, and in the Big 12, that's important. You got to have guys that can hang back there, and so that'll be fun too. I don't know if they'll break out necessarily, but I think we'll know if they've got some talent or some skills pretty quickly.
He's Matt Tate, Lawrence Journal World. Check out his work at kusports.com. Appreciate the time, man.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Nick. We'll see you.
All right, thank you. That's Matt Tate. I'm Nick Schwert. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. He mentioned the cornerbacks, Hassan Defense and Shaquille Taylor. Between them, have combined for 0 career starts. If you want to throw
your entire 2 deep, 0 career starts, 0 career action in D1.
That's something else, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. In the Big 12.
a conference that over the past several years has shown an affinity for throwing the ball. And I don't claim to be Vince Lombardi, but I do believe the cornerbacks are going to be heavily involved in trying to stop other teams from throwing the ball. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, Hassan Defense is a guy who people have been very excited about. Shaquille Taylor, haven't heard much about him. You can get into this. You can go down this rabbit hole of just going through guys that you're worried about. And if you want to concede that, oh, well, I think Hassan Defense is actually going to be pretty good right away, so maybe that's not going to be such a problem. But I don't know about that other corner spot. If you are going to go down this road where you're just pointing out all of the guys that you don't think are going to be great Big 12 caliber starters, well, you could do that with any team. But top-heavy talent on that defense, you give me Dorrance Armstrong, Daniel Wise, and then throw in your third player. You want to make it Joe Dineen. You want to make it Josh Ahambe. You want to make it Mike Lee. I'd take those three guys over about any three guys you want to pick from any other Big 12 defense. They've got top-heavy talent. They've got guys who can make plays. They've got veteran leadership on that defense. The question is going to be, how is it going to come together as a collective unit? Big part of that's going to be how those cornerbacks come along, and maybe we'll get a glimpse into that on Saturday against SEMO. It's 3:55 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. 1 hour down, 2 to go. Let's rank stuff at the top of the 4 o'clock hour.
Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
.406 new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN with Eric Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I just said that. We got news break coming up in about 35 minutes. We'll let you hear more from David Beatty at his press conference earlier today. But right now, it's time for the most self-explanatory segment in the history of Sports Talk Radio. It is time for another edition of Let's Rank Stuff. And in today's edition of Let's Rank Stuff, we're going to go somewhere that perhaps we've never gone before. We're going to take this thing to new depths, and things are going to get a little bit hairy. We are going to give you the top 5 and the bottom 5 way to consume potatoes.
Mm.
Perhaps the most versatile side dish known to mankind.
Sometimes not even a side dish.
Sometimes not. Sometimes it could be a main dish. Whatever the case may be, the potato is a very versatile food. I would probably consider it to be the number one root vegetable in the world. And we're going to tell you the ways to go about it. Let's get it going. We'll start with the worst. The 5th worst way to eat a potato. We're starting with controversy right off the bat. The baked potato.
Whoa. How are you going to do that right off the bat?
The baked potato is not only the 5th worst way to eat potatoes, it is the number one most overrated way to eat potatoes.
It's not doing it right.
Got nothing else prepared? Oh, you got a bag of potatoes sitting in the cupboard? Throw them in some tin foil, put them in the oven, and then eat them next to your protein. Here's the problem with the baked potato. Oh, they taste so good. You put some cheese on it. You put some bacon bits, a dollop of sour cream, maybe some scallions on top. It tastes really good. You know what else tastes really good covered in melted cheese and bacon? Everything. It's the you're not eating the baked potato for the potato at that point. You're eating it for the bacon and the cheese, all of the stuff that's terrible for you. So that, if that's your only argument as to why the baked potato is a good food, then it doesn't hold much water for me. You have anything else you want to go to bat for with the baked potato?
I just think that that should all be taken into account. I mean, if you're talking about, like,
Every single way you eat a potato could be covered with bacon and cheese, and it would make it better.
Yeah, and everything could be fried and put salt on it, and it would taste better, too.
Okay. What's your point? I haven't said anything other than the baked potato.
I'm just assuming there's going to be some
other
stuff.
Stop assuming.
Okay.
Let me get to it. Number four, worst way to eat a potato. The potato chip.
All right, you're just... let's end the list. This is not going well.
I can't tell you the last time I had a potato chip. They're bland, they're boring, they're greasy, they're terrible for you, they don't fill you up. What's to like about the potato chip?
So it's just like encompass every type of potato chip.
Yes.
Can't have barbecue chips?
Correct. Can't have barbecue, you can't have jalapeno, you can't have salt and vinegar. They're all trash. If you're going to eat chips, if you're going to eat chips, then just eat a tortilla chip. Eat a Dorito. Potato chips are bland, like Lay's, just like basic Lay's potato. Awful.
Well, you can get barbecue ones. You can get sour cream on it. You can get sour cream and cheddar. There's so many different options.
Still awful. They're thin. You have to eat 1,000 of them to fill you up. They get your fingers all greasy and salty. They make you feel bloated and nasty. And they get stuck in your teeth, and you're picking them out of your teeth for the next 30 minutes. The potato chips are awful. Eat a tortilla chip. Eat a Dorito. Number three worst way to eat a potato. Finally, I think we'll find something that we agree on. The boiled potato. The boiled potato is the biggest give-up dinner item ever. Like, what do we have in the... Just boil some potatoes, I guess. It makes a bland food. The potato is naturally bland. The boiling of the potatoes makes a bland food taste even more bland.
I've never had a boiled potato before.
You're not missing out. The boiled potato is the third worst way to eat a potato. Number two, worst way to eat a potato, steak fries.
Come on.
Notice we're not, I'm not saying.
There's nothing holy.
I'm not saying fries in general. I'm saying just steak fries. Let's put a bunch of soggy potato mush inside of a fried crust. It's the oldest trick in the potato book, is you fry it and you think, these will be good. These are just like regular French fries. Oh, wait, they're soggy, they're limp, they're mushy, and they're disgusting. The steak fries are terrible. You know what I'm talking about, right? The fat potato wedges, they're thick.
Yes.
Awful.
Great for picking up sauces, delivering some awesome barbecue sauce, some awesome ranch. You can't just drink ranch or barbecue sauce. They are great delivery.
The French
fry
is not meant to be a vehicle to deliver nasty sauce into your gullet. It is meant to be a dish upon itself. If you have to lather it in ranch dressing, then it's probably not that good to begin with. If your reason for liking the steak fry is it has more surface area than any other type of fry, that way you can transport more ranch into your mouth, that's your argument? Is that I
don't
get
see the
more,
problem with that
I can
argument.
Get more volume of ranch into my body in an efficient manner.
I don't see the problem with that argument.
It's an old trick, man. And if you want to just rank it up with other forms of fries, it is unequivocally the worst way to have a fry. It's horrific. And the steak fry is the number two worst way to eat a potato. And number one, the best way, or excuse me, the worst.
That was, a little bit of a distinction.
That was close. The worst was the best of the worst, or the best at being the worst.
Now you're confusing people.
The worst way, the number one worst way to consume potatoes is potato salad. And to be completely honest, it's on the short list of worst foods ever invented. Because how often do you say, kind of hungry, I could really go for a potato with some relish, celery, mustard, and mayonnaise. Like, let's just put all of the nastiest things in the world, combine them, throw some mushed potatoes in there, and we'll serve it at a barbecue. It smells terrible, and it tastes even worse. I probably couldn't even get down a spoonful if you asked me to. I would probably gag it up.
I just don't like the idea of like all this mayonnaise just being poured.
So you're cool with one form, one white creamy condiment, but not the other.
Ranch is way different than mayonnaise.
I agree, actually. Mayonnaise is pretty nasty. And even if you like potato salad, even if you're listening and you say, wait a minute, I like potato salad, that's fine. But it's still the worst way to consume potatoes. Like, you're telling me, if you like potato salad, all you're telling me is that you will eat potatoes in any form. You don't care how it's put together. You are going to eat potatoes. And that's fine. But there's no question about it. Potato salad's the worst. I'm Nick Schwert, Rock Chalk Sports Talk, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. This is Let's Rank Stuff. Top five, bottom five, worst and best ways to eat potatoes. We just got through the worst. Now let's get to the good stuff. The five best ways to consume potatoes. Number five, the tater tot. Mm. Now, this is just a step down from another form of eating potatoes that you're going to see later on in this list. But everybody's favorite high school lunchtime side item. I would trade for tater tots in high school. You want some yogurt? Give me those tots.
I think what's great about the tater tot, it's versatile. You can have it for breakfast, lunch, or dinner.
Put it in a breakfast burrito? Come on. It's great. Tater tots, number five, best way to eat a potato. Number four, the fries.
No, that's not fair. You can't single out steak fries and then encompass the rest of fries into one.
I think the rest of the fry family is ashamed that the steak fry considers itself to be a fry. It's a potato wedge is really what it is. Steak fries are just glorified potato wedges. That's why I said it's the oldest trick in the book. It's trying to disguise itself as a fry when it really has no relation to the other fry families. It's like tomato trying to call itself a fruit because it grows on a tree or it grows on a plant. No, you're a vegetable. You're a vegetable. You're not a fruit. No one's taking a tomato and saying, let me have this as a snack later. You're not going to bite into a tomato. It's not a fruit. Steak fry is not a fry. It's a potato wedge. It's mush. It's mushed potatoes. But curly fries, crinkle fries, seasoned fries, waffle fries, those are real fries. It's the way the fries were meant to be consumed. Steak fries, they honestly, if we're being honest, steak fries tarnish the reputation of all of the other fries in the family. And I don't think it's right. And I'm not going to stand for it anymore. And I'm not going to let you sit here and try and spew this garbage over these airwaves about how great steak fries are. Everybody knows they're not good.
Any type of fry is good, and I will just sit on that argument.
Number three, third best way to consume potatoes, the hash brown. As I said, the tater tots are maybe just a step away. They're the distant cousin of the hash brown, but the hash browns are the better form. It's the purest form of what you have in tater tots. They're greasy and delectable, the starchiest way to start your morning, and they also tend to be a system cleanser for me. If you just need to, like, just clear out your system, have a nice hearty serving of hash browns in the morning. Kind of cleanse your system a couple hours later, and you're going to be feeling like a new man.
And versatile again, too. You can have it for breakfast. You can put it in burritos. There's a lot of different stuff you can put on top of it.
Have some cheesy hash browns. Now, when I'm talking hash browns, I like the diced ones, not the hash brown cakes. The hash brown cakes are fine, but those are mostly just like a big tater tot.
Right.
So I like the diced ones, the ones that you're going to cook on a skillet. Man.
Any love for breakfast potatoes?
How about you let me finish the list first?
Okay.
Number two, the mashed potato. Cover them with cheese, cover them with gravy, cover them with butter. Doesn't matter what you put on top of it. It's going to be good. Even bad mashed potatoes are good mashed potatoes. It's still, even like the worst form of mashed potatoes is still going to be one of the best ways to eat potatoes.
See, to me, mashed potatoes are like the quintessential, like, above average potato dish. You're never really going to get, like, bad mashed potatoes, and there's ways that you can make the mashed potatoes really good, but they never, like, excel for me.
Okay, Derek, but here's your problem with that, is you're trying to make a list based off of potential, of upside, of if prepared correctly, this dish could be the best form of potatoes, and you're completely disregarding consistency, and consistency is a big thing. What's your availability?
Mashed potatoes are Alex Smith.
That's not even fair. I don't even think that's fair. Like, it's mashed potatoes are Ben Roethlisberger. You're never going to say Ben Roethlisberger is the best quarterback in the NFL. You're never going to say that. No one's ever said that. No one's ever said Ben Roethlisberger is the best to do it. But you know what he does every single year? He produces. Every single year, he wins. Consistency, reliability. That's what you get with the mashed potato, the Ben Roethlisberger of potatoes. And number one, the number one way to consume potatoes. Cheesy. I can't talk over the drum roll. Cheesy potatoes. The number one way to consume potatoes. It's the number one side dish on the planet. Scalloped potatoes, cheesy hash browns, anything I just named, hash browns, fries, tater tots. You put cheese on top of it, it's going to be better.
I think this is kind of cheating.
How is this kind of cheating?
You're just encompassing anything and putting cheese on it.
Okay, go ahead and do it and tell everybody why cheesy potatoes are awful.
No, it probably would be number one, but I think you're cheating because you're literally encompassing every type of potato and just putting cheese on it. Like, you're even encompassing baked potatoes here and putting cheese on it.
Because that's the way that they're consumed. Baked potatoes have cheese on them. No one bakes a potato and then just eats it. And if you do, like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? That is disgusting. How do you get that down? Seriously, how could you possibly eat a baked potato without cheese? Cheesy potatoes? And this could be the cubed, the little formed cube potatoes. This could be the diced potatoes. What's it called? Au gratin. Phenomenal. Scalloped potatoes, dude. Throw some cheese on it, put it in the oven. If you have a family gathering and, like, you have all these side dishes out, the cheesy potatoes are obviously going to be the first ones to go. Sometimes a family gathering, the person who brings cheesy potatoes will bring two pans of it because they know how popular it's going to be. It's, to be completely honest, I don't even think there's an argument against it. Even though you seem to have a problem with every type of potato and where I rank them on this list. But I don't care because
it was controversial.
That's what we do. We come to light a flame under your butts. 420 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWM.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
It's 523, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN with Eric Johnson. I'm Nick Schwert. Thanks for hanging out with us today on a lovely Tuesday afternoon. Tomorrow, we'll talk to Jesse Newell of the Kansas City Star. David Leske of Baseball Prospectus Kansas City will join us as well. Let's do a little bit of NFL whip around right about now. Big news coming out of the league last night, as we will have a new highest paid player, not only in the NFL, but in NFL history. And once again, it's somebody that you don't really think deserves to be the highest paid player in NFL history. It works this way in every sport, though. Like, isn't Mike Conley the highest paid player in NBA history?
He was until this year when, like, the Supermaxes came
out.
That's right. Yeah.
Matt Stafford of the Detroit Lions will become the highest paid player in NFL history as he signs a 5-year, $135 million extension.
He is, like, probably one of the richest NFL players, if not the. Like, I'm not just talking about this one contract, because he came into the league back in the day when there wasn't the rookie scale, to where if you were a rookie quarterback who got drafted one.
Wasn't his rookie deal for like $42 million? Yeah. Him and Sam Bradford both got these massive rookie deals.
He already, before this season starts, has made $110 million in his career.
Well, let me put it to you like this. The highest paid player in NFL history as far as career earnings is Eli Manning. And he's earned $205 million across the course of his career. Matt Stafford's hitting $135 million with one contract. One contract. So he'll be up there. He's already made $110 million. So $135 is going to push him well beyond what Eli Manning did. And these numbers are going to continue to go up because the guy who he surpassed, Derek Carr, got his contract extension earlier in the offseason. Stafford's going to make $27 million a year. That number is going to surpass what Carr got paid earlier this summer, which was $25 million a year. $92 million of it is guaranteed. $92 million is guaranteed, man. Unbelievable. And the numbers are going to continue to go up. Like, if you think Matt Stafford's going to be, he may be in that perfect range of he got that massive rookie deal and now he's getting a huge, massive contract extension to the point of guys may surpass him in yearly earnings. Guys may sign bigger deals than what he just signed with the Lions, but I don't think it's going to be tough for any of these guys to surpass him in career earnings.
And here's the problem here. And I understand you're going to have, you talk about this in NBA, how you're going to have people go, yeah, but this is just how the market is. This is how the market works.
And it's the dumbest thing in the world.
Right. Like, take a stand. And so it's fine if you have that highly of a paid quarterback, if it's a Tom Brady, if it's a Peyton Manning, if it's one of those guys who you can win a Super Bowl with him carrying your team, and Aaron Rodgers. But if it's Matt Stafford, a guy who's somewhere between probably like the 10th and 15th best quarterback in the NFL, you can't spend all that money on one quarterback. You can't do it. You're better off just having somebody who's bad. I mean, the one year that Joe Flacco won it, if you want to say, oh, well, Joe Flacco won it and Stafford's in that same tier of quarterbacks, he was making like $7 million that year. And now he's making more. They're not as good.
Well, right, because the problem with that is, if you want to say that, fine. If you want to say this is just how the market works, we had to pay him, what was the other option? Okay, fine. If 5 years from now you're paying him $27 million and he's past his prime, if he's no longer what he is, which he's not even an elite quarterback now, but if he's even a step below that in 5 years, and you are saddled by the fact that you're paying him $27 million and you can't go out and sign other players that are going to make your team better, and you're going to wonder, why? How do we get out of this? No, you can't. You don't get to ask that question if 5 years before that you were saying we had to do it, had to do it. That is the most laughable argument in sports, that NFL teams feel like they are pigeonholed. I get it. Matt Stafford is a really good quarterback. In terms of just quarterbacks in the world, Matt Stafford is one of the best, right?
Yeah.
And even in the league, he's in the top half of the league, probably. He's in your top 15 quarterbacks in the NFL. And you talk about, well, this is the market value. This is what these guys are getting paid. That's fine. That's fine if that's the way that you want to approach this. And if you want to sit here and say, well, they can't cut him, can they? Sure they can. Would it be popular with the fan base? Absolutely not. Would it restart your rebuilding process at a time when it didn't seem like you were geared for that? Yes, it absolutely would. But tell me what's more likely. Just tell me what's more likely on the surface, that you are going to reach your potential as a team with Matt Stafford, or that you should reset and go find a cheaper quarterback? Because that's the question you really have to be asking. Should the Lions have done what the Chiefs just did? I think the Chiefs handled this masterfully, and I said it when it happened. I think the Chiefs just created the blueprint for how teams with aging quarterbacks should handle them. Aging quarterbacks who have been successful in the league. That's exactly what Alex Smith is. You see it coming. You go out and identify your next guy, and you make that seamless transition. That's what the Chiefs are going to do. I don't know if it'll happen this year, next year, the year after that, but that's what's going to happen. And they're never going to have to give Alex Smith more than he's worth. Maybe they already did, but they're not going to have to do it to the extent at which the Lions are doing it, to the extent at which the Falcons had to do it. You're never going to have to pay Alex Smith elite quarterback money. And if Patrick Mahomes comes along and you have to sign him to a contract extension, hopefully you're doing it with the idea that he's going to be able to lead you to a Super Bowl. And maybe that's what the Lions are convincing themselves of. And if that's the case, if the Lions are doing this convincing themselves that Matt Stafford is going to take them to a Super Bowl, then that's just factually incorrect, because it's not going to happen. Dan Le Batard tweeted this out earlier today. Matt Stafford, in his career, is 5-46 against teams that finish with a winning record. 5-46. I'll say that again.
Impossible.
I will read this again. Matt Stafford is 5-46 against teams that finish with a winning record, and he is 1-25 on the road.
What?
How is it even possible? Matt Stafford is... It's unbelievable the way that Matt Stafford has kind of escaped criticism that has plagued guys like Cam Newton. Oh, well, he's got a big arm and he can throw for a lot of touchdowns, but he's not a winner. Like, Matt Stafford's evaded most of that criticism. Matt Stafford is Sam Bradford with a stronger arm. Like, that's it. And he's going to be the highest paid player in NFL history. Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota are going to be free agents in 2019 when their rookie deals end. What kind of deals are they going to get? Aaron Rodgers is going to be a free agent in 2020. Now, he's 33. So he'll be 36 at the time. But how much did Peyton Manning make at the tail end of his career?
He was one of the highest paid in the league, if not the highest.
He signed that deal.
It was like $20 million a year. But, I mean, now you'd probably have to conflate that.
He signed, what, when he was 36? It was 5 years, what, like $100 million? And the number, yeah, the number has gone up since then. Aaron Rodgers can get a $30 million a year contract. Like, I think we're only a matter of time before someone's getting a $200 million contract in football. And it makes sense. Like, if they're getting it in baseball, they should get it in football. I get it. The salary structure is different with no salary cap in baseball. But something's going to have to change in the collective bargaining agreement to where these numbers don't keep going up. Because the question was asked with Mike Trout when he was winning an MVP at the age of 21. Like, is this guy going to get a $500 million contract? And the answer is no. Like, the numbers aren't just going to keep going up to where guys are getting paid $50 million a year. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, there is a bubble that is going to burst, the same way it is with everything. I think our natural inclination is just to say, it's going to keep getting bigger. It's going to keep getting bigger. We say it with the NFL. The NFL, in general, is just going to keep getting bigger. No, it's not, because there's going to be a breaking point. There's going to be a tipping point, and these guys aren't going to be able to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger deals. Like, because that's the way NFL negotiating tactics work now. It's as simple as saying, Matt Stafford's making $27 million a year. Well, I'm better than him, so I want 30. Like, that's all Aaron Rodgers has to do. That's all he has to do. And what's the Packers' leverage? What do they say? You're going to let Aaron Rodgers walk? No chance. You got to pay him. And it's going to completely saddle what you want to do. And that's the question you have to ask these quarterbacks, these players. What is the value of winning to you? Tom Brady has taken pay cut after pay cut after pay cut, and he's gotten both sides of it. He's gotten Patriots fans saying, what a great guy. I love this dude. That's exactly the type of player. He understands what it takes to win in the NFL. And then you've got other people from the flip side saying, you're an idiot, man. You took a pay cut to sign Wes Welker, and he went and signed with the Broncos anyways. Like, what are you thinking? Take your money and run. I don't blame Matt Stafford. Good for you, man. You have found a way to beat the system. And Lions fans are probably going to be cursing your name in 3 or 4 years. It's 533 New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.